Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Road to Cheltenham. Now, as promised, this show is going to be majoring on the novice chasers and the novice hurdlers over the whole festive period. So it's still going to be an absolutely packed show. Although, Ruby, we are missing some key races, I suppose, particularly from the loss of Nace on Sunday, albeit, obviously, it's being rescheduled on Friday.
Yeah, it's on tomorrow, Lydia, and has everything barring Mystical Power, who looks like he's going to go to Punchestown on Sunday. So, I suppose Sunday's game is a gain as Friday's, for Sunday's loss even, is Friday's gain. But yeah, look, hopefully it'll be on tomorrow, and that's the beauty of an Irish system, Lydia. It can just be rearranged.
Yeah, don't boast. So we will be talking about that this time next week, among other things, more of that at the end of the show. But the first thing we're going to be talking about are the entries of the non-novice Grade 1 hurdles at the Cheltenham Festival. And a bit like last week, we're going to have a look at how this year's entries compare to previously. And if we have a look at the champion hurdle, we can see that there are five more entries than last year. It was a low across the board for these three races last year, just 17 in the champion hurdle, 28 in the stayers, 24 in the mares. They're all better this time around, albeit by just one in the mares hurdle. And there are, of course, some doubly entered horses, 11 of them across that. They're just 72 individual horses, making up a total entry of 83. And still, they are relying heavily on an Irish entry. Between 56 and 68% of those numbers come from horses trained in Ireland. So it's a better snapshot than last year, Ruby. But for example, there are six mares in the champion hurdle, probably all of whom you would expect to run in their race, provided that the big two, Concentration Hill and Stateman, stand. Right at the top of the market still is Lossy Mouth and Gallimarceau. We haven't seen Lossy Mouth since she won at Punchestown in April. Gallimarceau has since also won in Auteuil. I guess people are looking for reassurance that all is well with those two. Is this just how Willie Mullins approaches a four-year-old career these days?
No, it was a change of tact from Vauban, obviously ran before Christmas last year. But I guess looking at Lydia, even Footpad as a four-year-old into five-year-old over hurdles, it is a tricky year for them. I mean, what is it, one every 7 or 10 years wins a five-year-old wins a champion hurdle. So the record isn't great. I think Willie just decided that he would give these two fillies in particular more time to mature. So he didn't run them in their own age bracket before Christmas, but they're both ready to run. I think Gallimarceau is going to go to Doncaster at the end of the month. I'm sure Lossy Mouth will appear maybe at the Dublin Racing Festival or early in February, but they've both been in training for quite a while. They're both ready to rock. They both look really well. It was just a change in ploy. Let them grow, let them develop and see if you could maximise them as five-year-olds in the spring rather than maybe emptying them as four-year-olds in the winter.
Okay, so that's reassuring news for Lossy Mouth and Gallimarceau fans, and also for racing fans, full stop. So let's think about the stayers hurdle. There's been some eye-catching entrants in that, there always are, amongst the 36 entries. Ahoy Senor, Flooring Porter, Blazing Cal and Noble Yates in particular caught my eye. Ahoy Senor, he's run just twice over hurdles. We haven't seen him over the smaller obstacles since he won the Grade 1 Sefton on his second ever start in April 2021.
Yeah, look, when he gets a fence right, he's a good jumper. When he gets a fence wrong, he's not so good. I could see that the merit in an entry for him. He's a horse with a lot of ability and maybe hurdles will bring out the best in him. It's hard to say that jumping is his forte. I thought Noble Yates was a little bit disappointing behind Sam Majest at Limerick at Christmas over hurdles. We obviously haven't seen Blazing Cal in quite a while, and Flooring Porter's chasing career started well. But I'd say that I was too soft for him at Leopardstown. It'll be interesting to see what Gavin Cromwell does with him. But I think that stayers hurdle has turned into a cracking race with the horses that have appeared since Chupu won at Fairy House in December. If Crambo, Irish Points or Gerhard, I think it's becoming a competitive renewal.
Very much so, with some youngsters coming up. We'll be talking about Flooring Porter and whether there are excuses from his run over Christmas later on in the show. Let's move on to the champion hurdle, shall we? Looking at the 22 entries, I'm already sort of going down them and thinking we're going to be ending up with a field of about eight or nine. There's no Ribord, who finished second behind Constitution Hurdle. Clearly, Paul Nicholls concentrating on a chase campaign next season. Interestingly, we've got the four-year-old Burdett Road, a Royal Ascot winner, an impressive winner at Cheltenham in November. He missed Chepstow over Christmas, could go to the Dublin Racing Festival all trials day at Cheltenham. And he's got this champion hurdle entry. James Owen, his trainer, suggesting that the Triumph hurdle is still the plan.
Yeah, and I suppose if he wasn't to run the Triumph, to me, the Supreme would probably be a more realistic target. But look, Alderbrook won a champion hurdle as a novice, didn't he? After a high-class flat campaign. Look, it's been done before, but yeah, it's an interesting entry. But if he wasn't running the Triumph, I think he'd have a more realistic chance in the Supreme.
Two others to mention. Ampere Pass, having raised the question of the Stayers hurdle, he has been entered in that. But it sounds like from William Mullins now that they are sticking to the champion hurdle course, unless anything changes during between now and March.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Look, he hasn't raced like a 3 miler to me. Now he's bred to stay, I don't doubt his stamina, but whether he races professionally enough yet to be a stay in hurdle horse, I wouldn't think so. So look, he has to improve a bit to beat Stateman, which means you have to improve again to beat Constitution Hill, but who knows what the spring will bring.
Okay, and then there's regular roadie James Stark, who had this critique on our performance last week, Ruby. He was saying that he's surprised that we didn't consider Bob Ollinger as an outlier for the champion hurdle. And he's saying that he thought it would be unlikely to take on Constitution Hill, but Bob might run at the Dublin Racing Festival. We'd all love to see Bob in the Bula. Well, we might do. Let's talk about that in a moment. But James is quite right, because Bob Ollinger is in the entrance of the champion hurdle and could turn up there.
Yeah, he could. And it was actually Rory that argued, mentioned it to me during the week as well, put him up. So, yeah, I could see why people would be thinking that way. He doesn't jump out at me, but that's only my opinion. And the beauty of this, Lydia, is that everyone is entitled to an opinion.
Yeah, yeah. So that should be interesting, and he would be an interesting player in that field, I think. And he could well turn up in the Bula or the Unibet International Hurdle, as it's known these days, because there is a suggestion that Constitution Hill might not run in the race. Let's have a look at what Nicky Henderson was thinking about in terms of the plan for Constitution Hill at the start of the season. This he outlined on the Nick Luck Daily podcast on the 19th of September of last year. And obviously, the Fighting Fifth being rescheduled meant that that didn't happen. He went straight to the Christmas hurdle. But in his mind's eye at that point, he was thinking about going to Trials Day at Cheltenham, then the champion hurdle, and then Aintree or Punchestown. However, on New Year's Day, he spoke to Nick Luck again on his podcast and suggested that he wasn't completely sold on the idea of the international hurdle. And more recently, he's spoken to Robbie Stelling from Newbury Today Sport and said, "I'd like to run him if it makes perfect sense, but I'm not convinced that it does. He's got reservations about it. He stressed that there were reasons behind my thinking and I'm doing it for the best." So what do you think has changed, Ruby? There's some new things. As you get closer to the actuality rather than the theory, you start thinking about the actuality, don't you? It's the first time on the new course. The ground maybe might be quite testing. There's no Nico de Boinville. And maybe the horse has come to need more time between his races. These are the things that I'm thinking might have affected the decision. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be all of those things, Lydia. Maybe in theory, when Nicky was thinking about it in September, he'd have thought the run in the Fighting Fifth would have brought him on for Kempton and he'd have a fitter horse or a harder horse maybe by January. Now would only have him one run under his belt. Maybe he's thinking a run at the end of January will take too long to recover from to train him for March. Small things like that could be playing into it. But there's also the pressure of expectation. And when you're Nicky Henderson, Paul Nicholls, Winnie Mullins, Gordon Elliott and Henry de Bromhead, you're expected to have winners at Cheltenham. Same for all their riders, Paul Townend, Jack Kennedy, Harry Cobden, Nico de Bonville, Rachel Blackmore. Everybody else goes to somewhere like Cheltenham in the hope. But there's expectation on those five in particular. And when you look at Nicky Henderson's string and you go through the 28 races of the Cheltenham Festival, ace in that pack is Constitution Hill. And when you're trying to give yourself the best chance of guaranteeing yourself a winner, Nicky knows how to train champion hurdle winners. And that could just be playing in his mind as well.
So you're saying he's maximising his chances of winning in the champion hurdle and he doesn't see what he's going to gain from running in the international?
I'd say on the Tuesday, the 12th, 13th of March, whatever it is, Champion Hurdle Day, if he runs in the Bula and got beat in the Champion Hurdle, I know what Nicky Henderson would be thinking. And, you know, that's probably, that comes into your mind too. The pressure of expectation, Lydia, is a much different pressure to other pressures. And, you know, Nicky's entitled to do whatever he wants to do with his horse. Obviously, as a fan, we would all love to see Constitution Hill running. But Nicky is looking at a yard full of horses. The biggest shop window for horse racing for a trainer of his size is Cheltenham. He has to deliver that.
Okay, well, let's have a look. You mentioned Nicky Henderson's campaigning of past champion hurdlers. And I think this is very interesting. I mean, nobody has done this better. Nobody has managed a champion hurdler better than Nicky Henderson, because he's had 9 of them already. And if you look there over time, there has been a change since Epatante. Both Epatante and Constitution Hill had their last run at Christmas. That also applied to Constitution Hill when he won the Supreme. But if you look further back, horses ran more recently in the middle of February. And in the case of See You Then in the third year, just a week and a half before the champion hurdle. By the way, in 1985, the Balmoral hurdle was on firm, officially firm ground. That shows you how times have changed, probably, in terms of how horses are trained and raced in general. And I suppose the loss of the contenders hurdle means that there isn't a gimme kind of stepping stone. Although, you know, the Beulah might well be for a horse like Constitution Hill.
Yeah, I think when you're Constitution Hill, most races are going to be a gimme. I'm just thinking when you're reading out that list, Annie Power won the Cui Viga hurdle in the middle of February before she won the champion hurdle. That was her first run that season. But look, we're not questioning how Nicky Henderson wants to train his horse or what he wants to do with him. I would say if Nicky's looking at this, if he's looking at his approach, he's probably regretting saying as much in September. If he never told any of us where they were going, if you don't put up a date, nobody notices you're missing a date.
You've said that before, but you know, Nicky Henderson presumably is trying to be helpful to fans in laying out a campaign. Yeah, and what they
of course he was. And now what's he getting? The abuse from fans.
Well,
so
let's examine that. Why does this cause so much frustration among fans? And you know, I'm a fan of the sport, and it does frustrate me when we don't see a horse for a reason of opting out of a race as opposed to having a reason like a setback or the moving of the Fighting Fifth again would have been another good reason. Why do you think it does cause frustration among fans?
Because everyone wants to watch the best. But there's two ways of looking at it. And what kind of a horse is Constitution Hill? We don't know him enough of him yet to know how robust he is. You look, say, at Big Bucks and Cui Viga, two horses I would have ridden around the same time. You got to see Cui Viga twice a year, whereas you got to see Big Bucks, depending on whether the long walk was on or called off, 4-5 times a year. And obviously, when you saw Big Bucks 5 times a year, he built a bigger rapport. Now, he would probably, being a stayer's hurdle horse, was never going to be able to build a rapport that a Constitution Hill could, winning a champion hurdle. If he was to run 4 and 5 times a season, he could become astronomically famous. But Big Bucks did get a big following, but that was because he ran.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if you ask, you know, who's the greatest chaser, you go straight to Corto Star. You don't necessarily think of Best Mates 3 Gold Cups. And I suppose there's a wider context here as well, isn't there, in that the sport racing is struggling to maintain its hold on the wider public, its position, you know, in society and its relevance. And we're struggling for field sizes in Britain at the very, very top level. So that's a wider context that I think that fans feel, and this kind of plays into that. And I also think fans want to see Constitution Hill. Yeah, they want to go through the gate and see him. He'll put numbers on the gate, absolutely. And they want to be able to see him. But they also want him to be able to express his greatness so that the people outside of the sport know his name. And in order to do that, he has to run.
He does. And he does. But look, I don't envy the position Nicky Henderson is in. But I do think that if he turned up in the Bula, it probably would be similar to running the Contenders Hurdle.
Yeah, okay. Well, we don't know for certain. I mean, it's not a definitive statement, but certainly it has been raised by Nicky Henderson that Constitution Hill might go straight to Cheltenham. We're going straight to the Novice Hurdlers. So novice hurdlers it is, and we're going to start with the Challow, Ruby, at Newbury, run just before the new year, and won again for Paul Nicholls. He's got such a great record in this race, by Captain Teague.
Yeah, look, and it was a traditional slog that a Challow hurdle can be. Soft ground, hard work. Captain Teague got into a lovely position early, and his main opposition, Wilmont, under James Bone, raced a bit cleanly. Now, he got to the first hurdle, look away for the ground, was going quite a good gallop. Captain Teague pinged the third hurdle, which was better than we had seen at Cheltenham. But when he got to the fifth hurdle down the back, if you just watch look away in front to Captain Teague in second or behind him, you can see the difference in the jumping. Look away hurdles, whereas Captain T jumps, and he jumps more like a chaser. Now, when they got over by the cross fence, Wilmont stopped, like he just pulled the plug out of a balloon or punctured a balloon. He stopped that quick. And when they got up to the second last hurdle, Captain T arrived going easily. Harry Cobden committed him. Look away, the jukebox man, and Johnny Who were all kept plugging on his tail. But you knew when he got to the last hurdle that Harry was kicking himself for committing when he did, and Captain Teague just wouldn't go away from the opposition and put the race to bed, but he was always doing enough to win it. Now, I'm not sure what kind of a hurdle grade, quite a novice hurdler he is, whether he is at Cheltenham Horse. If he is, to me, he's more of an Albert Bartlett. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes to Ainshie and goes to the Sefton, but he's a horse who's going to make a wonderful chaser.
Yeah, he's a stayer as well, isn't he? I was thinking, looking at Lookaway and thinking, I know you've stayed that trip because you've stuck on for second, but I wouldn't mind seeing him back at two at that track for the Betfair Hurdle, and he is entered.
Yeah, I know. And that could be an ideal stepping stone for him. But Lydia, we're struggling for runners, and you're struggling for numbers in the UK. That's because your novices all end up in handicaps.
There is that issue. We should mention Johnny Who, after very little experience, shaped pretty well, didn't he, in fourth?
He did run really well, tried his best, and looked a decent horse in the making. Thought he kept going well, thought he was going to fade between the last two, but he kept going.
And just a catch-up on Wilmount. He's had a series of tests and checks on Monday. He's now got a clean bill of health, and Nicky Henderson is talking about dropping him back to 2 miles. Let's move on to the Lions of Limerick Jaguar Land Rover Novice Hurdle, a Grade 2 run at Limerick over Christmas. Loughlin won this.
Yeah, Loughlin won. Sean O'Keefe rode him for Willie Mullins. He had Stellar Story, Answer to Cave, and Search for Glory were the big four in the race. Search for Glory jumped out to make the run, and they went quite slow. Loughlin was quite keen. But then they'd gone a circuit, nothing really had happened, and Stellar Story joined Search for Glory at the front of the field. When they got into the back straight in the second circuit, you could see Answer to Cave and Loughlin were still quite keen when they got to the ninth hurdle. By the time they got to four out, Loughlin jumped up between the two Jigginstown runners. Now, they didn't commit or quicken until they got well into the home straight. Loughlin quickened best. Good jump at the second last hurdle for Sean O'Keefe, and he has the others flat out. But Loughlin missed the last half, lets the others back into it, and they keep plugging away. I thought it was a good performance from Loughlin, considering how keen he was. But also Answer to Cave, I thought he caught my eye. He was as keen as Loughlin, and there's a good race to be won with him.
Yeah, the pace wasn't particularly hot, was it? And that didn't help some of them settle, notably the horse you just mentioned, Answer to Cave.
No, it didn't, but it was real test of ground in Limerick, and it's better to see watch them finishing strongly than some of the races we've watched where they're coming down the straight and pedestrian pace.
Let's have a look at the Albert Bartlett Novices Hurdle Anti-Post Market and how things are standing. Now, this is still quite inchoate. There are three 12-1 shops at the top of the market. Shepherd du Soleil is running in the Lawlers of Mace, rescheduled. High Class Hero is there at 12-1. Now, we haven't seen him since October, Ruby. How is he?
He's in good form. I actually rode him work the other day. He seems to be in good order. I think he goes to Thurles maybe in the next week or that. Maybe even the Dublin Racing Festival, but he's ready to go. He had been running through the summer. He's not a real winter ground horse.
Croke Park there as well, but he's running in the Lawlers of Mace. And Captain Teague is quoted. I wonder whether Paul Nicholls might be more interested in the Albert Bartlett these days, having actually won it with Stay Away Faye.
Yeah, he might be. And it's a Sefton wouldn't surprise me either for him. You know, the Delahays have had good success at entry. Wouldn't surprise me if he went there.
I think the Sefton would suit him really well. Right, we're going to be dotting about in terms of distance because novices, we don't really know what they want at this stage, and so we're just going to be talking, basically. What's the word I'm looking for? Brainstorming about the horses over the Christmas period. Okay, now I'm going to dot back to Leopardstown and talk about No Flies On Him, Ruby.
Yeah, on Boxing Day or St. Stephen's Day, depending on which side of the Irish Sea you are, No Flies On Him. he had ascending to beat here, and ascending set a fair level of form. Big field, 28 runners. He was good and handy down the inside. He's in command of the race. By the time we got to the third hurdle, he's 2 years pricked, really professional, good jumper. Edward O'Grady trained him. Third out, third last even. Again, you can see he's loving what he's doing. Good jump at the second last hurdle, and ascending's coming to challenge him. But he rounds off the bend, quickens nicely, jumped the last really well. It was a good performance from him. He had beaten Django Boy in a point-to-point even in February time. And it was a really pleasing debut. Big field race, and he was in control of it from flag four.
Yes, and he was quite well back before the off as well. What do you see him as?
I'd imagine you go to the Dublin Racing Festival for the 2 mile novice, the Chanel Farmer, wouldn't you? Mm, that's right, I thought, would be the obvious place to go on.
Quite promising in second from DB Cooper as well. Let's move on to King of Kingsfield, shall we? Who's starting to look like more the finished article, isn't he?
He is, and he's progressed. Obviously, was beaten by Slade Steele in the maiden hurdle, ran really well in the Royal Bond. Mirazor West was all the talk in this race, though, Lydia. Mirazor West jumped out like No Flies and him had done a half an hour earlier. Good position down the inside, but it was a fall at the first hurdle. And when they run up by the winning post, the loose one shoots up Mirazor West's inside, and that set him alight. And when he raced away from the stands, jumped the third hurdle, he was doing over 35 miles an hour. Now, that's clipping along in Leopardstown that early in a race. He was running very keen with Mark, but then he started to go right. Sixth hurdle, he was very right. You can see King of Kingsfield's in a beautiful position down the inside. When they get around to the second last, Mirazor West is still running away in front, but he doesn't have anything left to repel King of Kingsfield, who gets a great split off the bend, joins him going to the last and powers away to win well. I thought actually off the bend, King of Kingsfield or Mirazor West was going to fold. He didn't. And I thought James's gate caught my eye as well. He made a mistake at the last. He has entries at the weekend, but I thought he was a horse that was starting to show maybe some of what he showed in bumpers as well.
Agreed. Interestingly, Gordon Elliott said after King of Kingsfield won that the change of tactics has really helped him, and also that the sounder surface is probably key to him. Now, this was the only day of the four where that did apply because the rain hadn't yet come.
It did. Now, that was on Tuesday. Wednesday, obviously, the rain came and they were still out on the middle of the track and it was really testing. By Thursday and Friday in Leopardstown, I think Ballyburn is the next one we're going to watch. Mm. Friday, Ballyburn was right in. So the ground, whilst it wasn't quick, wasn't as bad by Friday as it had been on Wednesday.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about that when we talk about Wednesday's runners. You're right. Ballyburn next. Now, he'd been beaten on debut against Firefox, who runs in the Lawlers of Nace, but the two of them had come well clear and he'd still shaped very well.
He had shaped very well, stepped up to 2.5 miles. Paul Townend dropped him in the box seat, I suppose is the word we used to say it, behind the leader down the inside. Kalitas Poolaw went very right at the first. He was the main opposition. He'd finished second to Daddy Longlegs. But when they got around into the back straight, around by the fourth hurdle, you could still see Ballyburn. He's a real low head carriage. He was quite keen with Paul Townend. He got in quite close. He was better at the fifth hurdle. The second last, which was the third last on the actual racetrack, Paul gave him a squeeze and he put down. The last, which was the second last because of a bypass, he jumped that well, a little bit high maybe, but he gets in command of the race and he pulls well clear from the bend up to the last hurdle, which we're bypassing. But when Paul gives him a squeeze passing the last hurdle, he shows a good turn of foot and he sprinted to the line to win half the track. Now, it wasn't that strong a maiden hurdle. He was in tight. He was a short price favourite, but he couldn't have been any more impressive. Now, whether he sticks at 2.5 or goes back to 2 or even goes up to 3 miles, who knows at Willie Mullins.
I couldn't work that out from him necessarily. Do you have a view?
I don't necessarily have a really strong view. I think a lot will depend on what Ile Atlantique does and a few more willies actually tomorrow afternoon and on Sunday. But I'd imagine a lot of willies will go to the Dublin Racing Festival and the pecking order will be decided there.
We've seen this before from Willie Mullins and quite often it's the other horses shuffling around the main one. Is there a main one this season?
Hard to say. Off bumper form, you would have said it was going to be Ballyburn and then Ile Atlantique, maybe Tully Hill. Tully Hill blotted his copybook in a maiden hurdle. He's in again tomorrow as well. But I'd say there's still plenty of improvement to come from those novices, the Willies and DRF and the Cheltenham Festival will be interesting.
Yeah, I think it's much more up for grabs as in who goes where this time around, because you haven't got that one central peg, you know, your Facile Vega or whatever, where everyone else has to move around. So Gerhard being previously as well, another one. Let's talk about Bulldog, shall we, who won that Tramore maiden hurdle that's been won in the past by El Fabiolo in the same double green colours of Simon and Isaac Suede.
New Year's Day in Tramore, and he jumped out on the inside on the JJ Slevin, was a bit keen going to the first hurdle, jumped it quite well, and got back into second place by the time they climbed the hill to follow Cappuccino. He jumped the last on the second circuit. He was good and quick at the hurdle, but he was nicely settled. And the time they got back around then on the third circuit, or heading to the second last hurdle, Emilio Lisis and Willie Mullins had closed up, so had Gorgeous Tom. But he pinged the second last, went to the last, jumped it well, and he gave £8 to the runner-up, which was Gorgeous Tom. Gorgeous Tom had finished second to Caldwell Potter at Navan, so he's a good yardstick in second. I thought Bulldog beat him impressively, and he's a horse going in the right direction. Look, it's hard to say don't get caught out by Tremor, and Fabiolo, Saint Roy, etc. There's been loads of good winners in Tremor. So don't just mark notebook, just don't mark it down because it's Tremor.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a race that does provide some really good horses. Tripwise with Bulldog, did you form a view?
Looked a 2 miler to me. I know it was slow ground, but he didn't look like he was short in speed.
Okay, well, of course, we have the eternal question about speed or stamina for the Ballymore versus the Supreme. The next betting show that we're going to look at is the Ballymore Novices Hurdle. So Ballyburn is the favourite at 7-2. Firefox next in at 6-1 with Paddy Power. Caldwell Potter is there. But Caldwell Potter won the Future Champions Novice Hurdle. Now, this was on day two. Maybe it was the most difficult ground of the whole 4 days. And I loved what he did here.
So did I. Now, you're racing on what is the flat line in the summertime. So you can imagine that's watered all summer. Then you had this deluge of rain and it got very soft very quick. But it was a really good race. So you had to stay at Westport Cove making the run, and Caldwell Potter just sat outside him. Predator's going next to him. Behind him down the inside was the big Dayoon down memory lane in the McManus colours was outside him. And Smooth Tom on the outside. And then dropped in at the back were Absurd and Daddy Longlegs. Daddy Longlegs is quite high at the first. And you can see when the race up by the winning post, Absurd having run in the Melbourne Cup, is still quite keen on the Daddy Mullins. When they go to the third hurdle, you can just see the amount of water on the track and the splashing. It was really soft. It was quite deep. And Westport Cove was going a good gallop for the ground. They jumped the fourth hurdle. Derek O'Connor had to give down memory lane a squeeze on landing. When they got to the sixth hurdle, Smooth Tom missed. And Paul Townend was getting anxious on Daddy Longlegs on the inside. And when they turned to the second last hurdle, Westport Cove stopped. The big Dayoon was dropping out the back of the shot. But it was at the second last hurdle. This race just changed in an instant. Predator's Gold and Caldwell Potter went away from the back of the second last hurdle. And everything else just punctured. And now Caldwell Potter quickened off the bend, got Predator's Gold at it. Jack Kennedy was mooching away. Patrick revved up Predator's Gold to have one go at him going to the last. Neither of them were brilliant, but Caldwell Potter was better. Predator's Gold missed. And I loved the way he went to the line. But when you factored in the ground, you factored in how many horses disappointed in the race. To me, it was more of a trial for a 2.5 mile race than a 2 mile race.
I tend to agree with that. He's a full brother to Mighty Potter, who of course won this race 2 years earlier and has won three other grade ones as well, the sadly ill-fated Mighty Potter. But the thing with Cheltenham specifically, whilst I don't disagree with your analysis of what Caldwell Potter is, you've got the strongly run Supreme with an accent on stamina over 2 miles, and the often steadily run Ballymore over 2.5 miles, which often rewards pace. So it's open to question as to where he might go.
No, the Supreme favours pace. The Ballymore favours speed, a change of gear.
Sorry, wrong word.
Sorry, that's the way I see it. That's only my opinion. Sorry for correcting like a bold school child. But it's... He looked to me like he can travel, but he can quicken up. It's a hard enough one to explain, but to have raw pace to be able to go and travel at a Supreme speed is quite different to a horse who can go along and then quicken up.
Particularly on ground that we expect to be different in March.
Much different. But Caldwell Potter did change gears at Navan, quickened to the last to go and win. He did change gears off the bend at Leopardstown to go and win. To me, he looks like a really good horse, and I wouldn't have any fears with him in the Ballymore.
And Predator's Gold, I mean, he's pretty young. He shapes like a decent stayer in time.
Yeah, and you can even see him if you watch the replay again. He does quicken going to the last hurdle with Patrick Mullins. He does change gears. Now, he makes a mistake at the last, and that takes all the momentum out of him. But, yeah, I'd say he's a fair horse too.
Let's talk about the Form B at Aintree, Grade 1 on Boxing Day, shall we? This replaces the Tolworth, which is usually run at the first weekend of January at Sandown. What did you make of this? Django by one, but most people think that Farron Glory would have done had he stood up 2 out.
Probably. Django Boy was your winner. He's in the check corners there in the middle of your shot. And look, it was a decent enough contest. Connacht Park jumped out in front. Teller the Name sat second in the pink. Farron Glory was just behind in the dark colours. You had Camp Sinas in the North Feely, red and blue. Favour and Fortune was behind Farron Glory and Trevor Hemmings's, or late Trevor Hemmings's colours. You also had July Flowers at the very back, and in front of them were Flamingo Dreams and Making Headway. Now, Connacht Park got very high at the first hurdle and wasn't much better at the second. But when they got to the third hurdle, you could see Farron Glory was in a lovely position just behind the pace. And James Bowen was following his brother Sean and Django by. Cam Sinas made a move up to them when they got to the last hurdle down the back. Paddy Brennan went up on the outside. And they all sort of had some sort of chance going away from that fourth last hurdle. But when they got to the third last, July Flower was gone. So was Teller the Name. And your eye was drawn to Farron Glory. He looked to be the one that was going the best when he tipped up at the second last. Thankfully, he got up from that fall. There wasn't a bother on him. And then that left it down to Django Boy in Favour and Fortune. And it looked the match going to the last. And probably marginally, the Favour and Fortune was going better. But the long run in really helped Django Boy. He stayed stronger. He had finished second to Edward O'Grady's No Flies and him in a point to point. I think that's the same Django Boy. And it was a good performance. It was a solid staying performance, I thought.
I agree with that, which is why I wouldn't be completely dogmatic about what might have happened had Farron Glory stood up, because the amount that Django By found was quite notable. And as you've made the point, Favour and Fortune was travelling better at the time.
He was travelling better. And that is Aintree at most times of the year, but especially in the winter, really testing ground. It's, I know it's dead flat, but it's a long way down the straight in Aintree.
Yeah, 100%. I like Django By. I think he's underestimated compared to his sable companions at Nicky Henderson's. I wonder whether he shows less at home. You know, the way he runs makes me think he probably does.
Possibly, but Morning Glories, I prefer Afternoon Heroes.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about one that might be both, his sable companion Jericho de Repenay, who won another steadily run affair at Newbury. But again, there's something intangible about this horse. Both times, he's kind of looked classy. Does that make sense?
He never looks in trouble, does he? He's a great presence. He's obviously a beautiful horse. I haven't seen him in the flesh. But look, obviously no one wanted to go on. Eventually, Niall Houlihan does an officer of state. And Jericho de Repenay, James Bowen, sits in right behind him. When they got around into the back straight, Officer of State was in the middle of the track. James Bowen switched his to his inside. He was quick and nimble at the fifth hurdle, third last hurdle, really good jump down to the second last. The race still hadn't developed. They were still going steadily enough in and around 30-ish miles an hour, jumped the second last well, and then it became a real dash down to the last and they went through the gears. But if you never thought that Jericho de Repenay wasn't going to win, jumped the last really well, and he does it still with ease as he runs to the line. It was a really professional and impressive performance, but it's hard to know what he beats. It's other than what it's shot to your eye. It looks good to the eye.
And also, obviously, to the feel, because it was interesting that James Bowen, going into the race, thought this horse needs stepping up and trip, and coming out of the race thought, no, he doesn't. I mean, actually sitting on the horse in a race situation changed his mind about the horse. Let's have a look at where he stands in the Sky Bet Supreme, shall we? And Jericho de Repenay does top the betting for the Supreme for Paddy Power at 5-1. Have a look at It's For Me there at 10-1. Now, I've spoken to Anthony Bromley, who is the racing manager to owners Simon Minear and Isaac Suede. He said the horse has had a setback over Christmas. He missed his entries in the Christmas festival at Leopardstown. He's not entered in the Dublin Racing Festival. It's pretty much going to be a race against time to get ready for Cheltenham. He's going to need everything to go right. I suppose he might make Punchestown is the view. And Anthony Bromley also mentioned that Bulldog had done really well to win that race at Tramore. He was carrying an £8 penalty in it. But that horse is regarded as a nascent chaser and might not necessarily be running in the cauldron of the big festivals this season as a novice hurdler. It seems to be a bit buzzy. Should mention also A Dream to Share, who was on that graphic for the Supreme. He too has had a setback, and it's going to be a race against time to get him ready for Cheltenham. Let's hope that we see him out pretty soon. We've got some significant players from this two-mile novice division potentially running this weekend. We'd be the Grade 2 Skybet Moscow Flyer at Punchestown, tends to be a significant race in this division. And we've got the impressive Navan winner, Jagoro, up against Mystical Power, who's defected from the Lawlers of Mace rescheduled.
Yeah, and he definitely adds to the Skybet Moscow Flyer on Sunday at Punchestown. It is a race that has produced great winners, Lydia, down the years, without ever being a really strong or deep race. And we look back through while in Pere Pass, Vatour, etc. beat, but Duvan, but this year looks strong enough for another Jagoro even, and Mystical Power. And there's a few more in there. It looks a good enough contest. And obviously, tomorrow you've got the Lawlers Hotel in Nace, and gives us something to look at next week.
Very, very much so. And I think that's Lawlers of Nace. I think, it, despite the defection of one horse, the strongest novice hurdle that we've seen so far this season. We'll be analysing both of those races this time next week.
If you were with your riding boots on, sitting in the weigh room, going out to ride against Constitution Hill, is there a chink in the armour? Is there anything you can do to kind of maybe get him out of his comfort zone?
It doesn't look to be, because you think how fast John Bonn and Dysart Dynamo went in a Supreme. Like, they went hammer and tongs. Constitution Hill just sat in the box seat third, right behind him, and took it off him at the third last. So, I mean, if you go flat out, he's an even better horse. That was visually his most impressive performance. If you go steady, Nico just gets involved. He went steady in last year's champion hurdle. Nico got upside, good and early. He keeps it really simple on him. So there doesn't look to be an obvious flaw. He's a very honest horse, Constitution Hill. Whereas when you were racing against, say, an Altior, you could think, well, he's idling in front. Yeah. If I leave him there and come at him wide and late, I might nab him, or he can be some way creative. But when you look at Constitution Hill, he's just flawless. He's damn close to perfect, like, isn't he?
Yeah.
Now it's time to talk about the novice chasers, and there is only one place to start, in my opinion, Ruby, and that is with the Ladbrokes Quarto Star and the absolutely brilliant Ilef Pensee. We talked about him last week to bust the myth that the King George was strongly run. If that was strongly run, which it wasn't, then Ilef Pensee is supersonic.
Good way of putting it, but it was a brilliant performance. It was a great performance to watch, and we're going to watch plenty of it here now. Obviously, you had Ile Francais, Hermes Allen, Kilbeg King, Giovenco. But look, he jumped out. He was good and brave at the first for a horse we hadn't seen jumping in English fences, and absolutely flew the ditch. But so too did Hermes Allen right behind him. They got to the fourth fence. Look at the spread on the field, and you look at the horse at the very back, who's already struggling. The seventh fence, Hermes Allen made a bit of a mistake. They got to the eighth fence, Ile France got in close. James Reeby had to keep a good hold of him. When they got away from the stands, Marvel Sands decided that he'd had enough. No way he was going to follow him around for another circuit and pulled himself up. And 13th fence, James Reeby lay onto Ile France's neck and he pinged it. But because of that, he struggled to get him back at the 14th and he hit it a good belt. But as he hit it, Hermes Allen pecked right behind him. And then he went to the next fence and stood outside the wings. It was spectacular. Third last, Giovinco is starting to look speed. Kilbeg King is starting to stay on with Hermes Allen. Gets in close, but it's very fast at the second last. And it's all over by the time he gets down to the last fence. It was spectacular to watch. And the figures back it up, Lydia.
Very, very much so. Let's have a look at the lengths he gained jumping. Plus 27.11. I mean, that graphic shows us that Hermes Allen jumped very well, but not half as well as the winner.
No, he jumped brilliantly. I looked, fences 6, 7 and 8. Hermes Allen got the better of Ile France. It also shows you that both of them were on the negative at fence 14, where they both made mistakes. But then again, the positives at 15. The third last fence, the second last and the last, when Ile France was keeping up the speed he was going. Look at the ground he gets at the last fence. But that's purely because Hermes Allen, to give him credit, had tried to go with him. He tried to lie into him. He tried to be competitive and he paid the price at the very end of the race. But it was a spectacular performance. And if you're into data, that just backs it up.
It does. And I wrote in my column, this is Ile Francais, 3.7 seconds faster overall than the King George, carrying just £3 less than the more seasoned chasers. Faster at all points of the race bar for the first couple of races. He also completed the fastest straight of all three chases that day, including Blow Your Wads race, over half a mile shorter. The point is that having gone at that pace, the remarkable thing is that he wasn't slowing down at the end.
No, he wasn't. And look, he got a great ride as well. We'll do it another time, but he's not just as easy as folding over, letting him at it. James Reezy was really good on his back as well, but it blew you away to watch it, and it was the kind of sight you want to see, isn't it?
It very much is. I mean, even third place Kilbo King, I thought, can probably win a handicap chase. And Hermes Allen, I think, as often is, been a little bit of an overreaction to his defeat. You've made the point. He tried to go with him. He even tried to have a little go three out. I think that's the most substantial British train novice chaser of the season, personally.
I'd agree with you. And he improved a lot from his run at Newbury. And I'd say it's a huge overreaction to his performance.
Right, let's move on to the Neville Hotels Novice Chase Grade 1 at Leopardstown. And this was Grange Clare West proving that he can string two good runs together.
Yeah, I was doubting him, but he proved me wrong, and I'm glad that he did. He's in the Cheveny Park colours, obviously. Florian Porter jumped out in front and made it down the inside. Favre de Chambre Doom in the first Chicken Sound colours was wide. Grange Clare West and Frankie Maneuver sat behind them. Tullyborg Fort. But when they get to the first fence, the second favourite, Cobbers Cross, was well behind them. And he's right at the back. At the fourth fence, they all seem to be jumping pretty well. But at the fifth fence, Corbett's Cross was quite slow and very deliberate. Around the corner to the eighth fence, away from the stands, and Flanking Maneuver made a mistake. But Grange Clare West was very good. And at fence 12, Grange Clare West, he attacks it and he's really quick. And that was pretty much sums up his race in one jump, how he jumped. The third last, they're all pretty much still in it. But at the second last, Grange Clare West appears on the outside. And in a matter of strides, this race was over. Paul Townend again swung wide on him to the last fence, as he had done at Gallop and the Champ. He was good at the last. Corbett's Cross couldn't catch up to him, and he powered away to win, and win impressively. He always had the potential. Now he's starting to deliver on that, and it was a solid performance. Not quite Ile France, but it was a really solid performance.
It was a good performance, and Paul Townend steered that path that he had on Gallop and de Champ. Remember, we floated last week whether it might have been a disadvantage to go around the inside. Now, Florian Porter has to, given his left-leaning tendencies, but Corbett's Cross was down towards the inside at all. It might be that they ran better than it seems, literally.
It did. Someone asked us in Ace about that, didn't they? I can't remember who it was. Somebody floated the same idea to us. But, maybe there was. Time will tell.
Let's move on to Punchestan's beginner chase on New Year's Eve, shall we? Which saw Monty Star and Three Card Brag taking each other on.
Yeah, and Three Card Brag in a change of colours, black and green instead of the usual blue, white and maroon. First fence, they both jumped it quite well, and it was a match between the two of them. But at the second fence, Three Card Brag reaches for it. And again, at the third fence, he reaches for it. In front on his own, he wasn't attacking. And at the fourth fence, Monty Star jumps up to him. But Rachel Blackmore was watching what was going on, because she pulled straight back behind Jack Kennedy and didn't give him any help. At the 11th fence, again, Monty Starr jumps right up behind Three Card Brag. Rachel takes him back. Monty Starr's jumping was so much better than Three Card Brag's. 13th fence, again, you can see how good he is. When they got to the second last, he jumped himself to the lead and he was able to pull away from Three Card Brag and reverse that fairy house form. A lot of it was down to jumping. And Three Card Brag would be a better horse getting the lead with something in front of him and maybe going a bit further. But Monty Starr was impressive.
My perception is if they do both go to the Cheltenham Festival, they might go different paths. Monty Star maybe to the Brown Advisory, and Three Card Brag maybe to the National Hunt Chase. Let's have a look at the Brown Advisory Novices Chase Antipodes Market and what has markedly moved. Well, Grange Clare West is now the 7-2 favourite, having been 14-1 pre-Christmas. Factor File is a mover there as well, and we'll come to him in a moment. Corbett's Cross has been pushed out. Let's go back to Leopardstown rather. And this is Handicap Company. Again, a race that we mentioned last week, a horse that steered a relatively wide course to win the handicap. The maiden meeting of the waters over 3 miles.
Yeah, he had won a Cork.
Sorry, the novice.
Yeah, sorry. Apologies. He had won a 0-116 beginner's chase at Cork. But look, Danny Mullins booked him out really wide. Hard to see, but he was forced through the tape, got an absolute flyer. And when the camera switches to the second fence, you can see him on the stand side, the light blue colours, in a really handy position. Danny got him back into mid-division behind Adamantly Chosen in the green and yellow by the time they got up past the winning post. But look, when they got down the back straight, Hughesfield Handicap, last ditch, he's the one that quickens to the last ditch. He's the novice. Shoots into the shot and passes three in the air. And the time to get to the last fence, he arrives beside James de Burley. Jumps it quite well, a bit to his left, maybe, if you're nitpicking. And he beats Panda Boy, Real Steel, and James de Burley. Now, that penalty will take him up plenty high, take him out of the Kim Muir, and probably leaves him in line for the National Hunt Chase.
It does, potentially. We can have a look at the current standings and post with Paddy Power for the National Hunt Chase, which has Embassy Gardens, who took Sir Fences so well there at 8-1. He'll need to run again, won't he, over Fences, Ruby, in order to qualify?
Embassy Garden won a 3-mile novice chase, so he does one run qualify. He definitely has the distance. Maybe he needs a second start, but I think the plan is Nace, Lydia, the 3-mile novice chase and Nace for him. Obviously, Nick Rocket won at Christmas. We'll come back to him next week. He would have to run again because his two starts of offence have only been over 2 miles and 5 furlongs. So he has to go and compete at the distance as well. So, a lot to happen in that National Hunt Chase picture yet.
And Factor File is there in the betting. He appears in virtually every anti-post betting for the novice chases at Cheltenham. Let's have a look at his performance at Leopardstown over Christmas. This was really good, wasn't it?
It was, and I suppose the one thing with Factor File, this was 2 miles and 5. This distance suits, I don't know, would he come down and trip? Manila Kukuna did make the run, and Factor File was down the inside. Spirit of Legend and Zana here were the four that counted in the race. Manila Kukuna was quite high at the first, and again at the 8th fence, Manila Kukuna was still well up in the air. It took him a long time to come down. Wasn't a whole lot happened in this race, but the third last fence, Factor File jumped himself to the lead. It is the fourth last, but it was the third last in this race. The two out the ditch when he's on his own, he attacks it and he's really good. And at the second last, or the last fence, they jumped. Mark Walsh was sitting there, let him pop it, and he came out of his hands and absolutely pinged it, which tells you how much he had left in the tank. And he quickens away well then from the bypass last fence to win. It was an impressive performance. I loved how he jumped. Could I see him being a 2-miler? Probably not. 2-5, 3-1, 3-6, all options are open.
Yeah, that sort of mirrors his sort of position in the betting as well. So, you know, where's he going to go? I mean, there's Willie Mullins and all of his different novice chases. There's also JP McManus, his owner, and his novice chases. He's got, you know, Corbett's Cross. You know, there are things to juggle here.
Yeah, but unfortunately, if you looked at JP's hand, the ones that are missing are nearly as good as the ones he has. When you look at Iroko, In the Pocket, and Willie's horse, the one Indiana Dream. I mean, that's a fair, I don't care how many horses you have, that's a fair blow for any owner to take.
Very much so. We talked about that last week. It is such a shame. Right. Now, the focus is on you, Roadies, because we asked you a question via social media. And this is the question that we asked you. It was about a certain Gaelic Warrior. Where would you run Gaelic Warrior next and why? Would it be the Irish Arkle or would it be the Ladbrokes Novice Chase, both at the Dublin Racing Festival? Where would you go, Ruby? Which would you, given a free hand?
Given a free hand, I'd probably go 2-2. See, it's 2-1 in Leopardstown. Mm. And it wouldn't necessarily mean I thought he was an Arkle horse. 2-1 at Leopardstown. I know plenty of Arkle winners do win Arkles, but horses that won further win them as well.
Agreed. Let's have a look at what you think.
Irish Arkles, that is.
Yeah. A couple of people responded. This is David Johnson. He says, given his well-documented issues with jumping out right, I don't mind Connection sticking with 2.5 miles with him. Early Easter this year means he can take in Fairy House at 2.5 miles, grade one, and then maybe try 2 mile at Punchestown if all has gone well. That's the key point. If you're thinking, I mean, even if Gaelic Warrior does, for instance, run in the Irish Arkle, it does, the Arkle itself is a different matter because it's on the old course, which is tighter than the new course. That's why the turn is good for Gaelic Warrior, isn't it?
You know, anti-course bet or something.
No, not at all. What are those prices? Goodness no. And then this is from...
But I would be shocked if Willie Mullins kept Gaelic Warrior in close something to wait for Ferrius.
Mars said this. This made me laugh. So he says of Gaelic Warrior, backed him for the Brown Advisory because he was definitely a 3 mile chaser. Then I backed him for the Turners after Willie said that trip would suit better. So he's definitely going for the Irish Arkle over 2 miles, isn't he?
Yeah.
Probably. Right, this is what you all thought. Here are the results of our poll. And so just by a fairly tight margin, our roadies would run Gaelic Warrior in the Irish Arkle next.
That's divides opinion, doesn't he? And that's the kind of horse he is. But look, we're going to watch him win the Limerick. And how does he divide your opinion? American Mike, Lucid Dreams, Iletta Tomp, I know the way you're thinking, but the ones to follow him. But he absolutely flies the first with Patrick Mullins. He gets to the second, he's a little more measured, but quite low and quick. And then at the third fence, he guesses. But as he guesses, American Mike misses behind him. Now, they got down into the home straight, And he was good and long and brave the last fence for a circle to go, but he let the Tompas closing up. And then again, into the back straight, really quick at fence eight. Now at 11, when the camera switches, you can see him going to his right. But then Patrick slows it down from fence 12 all the way down into the home straight. American Mike and Edith Tompas gang up behind him. He quickens to 13, jumps marginally to his right. I don't think he interferes too much with Edith Tompas. And he's good and quick at the last again. And he wins really impressively. I'd say every trip is open to Gaelic Warrior. And obviously he was much more rideable in Limerick than he was at Punchestown. And you'd imagine with that run under his belt, he'll be easier to ride again next time wherever he goes.
Yeah, we covered, of course, that Chamozzle just after the home turn on last week's show. So if you didn't see that, that's where you can find Ruby's view on it in Analyse This. Here is the betting for the Turner's Novice Chase. And before Christmas, Gaelic Warrior was the 15-8 favourite, and now he's 5-4 favourite. And there are a number of horses that have moved, including Founder 50, who we'll deal with in a moment. In fact, let's deal with him next, shall we? This is the Racing Post Novice Chase over 2 mile 1 at Leopardstown. And this was glacially run.
It was quite, but it was up and down. It was quick, slow, quick, slow. It was no rhythm to the race at all. Fasal Vega, Sharjah, and my mate Mozzie took on Founder 50. Founder 50 went to the right first, jumps right, jumps out in front of Fasal Vega. And then when he comes up past the stands with Jack Kennedy, he looks like he was going to run down the hurdle track, and Jack just gets him back on the chase track. They get to the third fence, Founder 50 again jumps out to his right, but they were under 30 miles an hour approach to it. And if you watch this back on Racing TV or any channel, you'll see the speedometer on the right going up and down like a yo-yo. The fifth, sixth fence to get to the wide apart, and they end up coming close together. At the seventh fence again, Founder 50 goes right. It gets the eighth fence before Fasal Vega switches to his inside and jumps through on his inside at the eight. And then when they swing across to the second last fence, they're side by side. But when they land over this, they sprint to the bend and they get up to 35, 6, 7 miles an hour off the home turn. And then Fasal Vega starts to fold. Founder 50 gets the better of him, jumps the last better. My mate Mozzie, who has watched it all happen, and in front of him, I think he don't know who was robbed second here. He rode for second, and he's ended up running into the position. Sharjah finished third, and Fasal Vega faded.
Fasal Vega's the imponderable here. Does he need further, and or does he need a more positive ride over 2 miles?
He could need both. But he's definitely the imponderable, and that's the second time now he's blown out at Leopardstown.
It is. Do you think it is track-related, or is it... I think he clearly needs to be more positively ridden if he's going to run over two.
Well, he won a bumper at Leopardstown as well, so you can't just blame Leopardstown. And he won a maiden hurdle there, so it's not track-related. Not a maiden hurdle, he's a maiden hurdle fair, yes. I wouldn't think it's track-related, but I would think that, yeah, he's a galloper. He's out of it. He's out of us there.
He is. And how about the winner? He's still pretty raw. He shaped to sort of duck out at one point. So Jack Kennedy was stressing that he's learning on the job at the moment.
He is. And he'd probably be a better horse with a lead. Something last year, he was a tearaway. Now he's not. And maybe with something competitively dragging him along, he might be a better horse.
Okay. The following day, Marine Nationale made his chasing debut. And again, I suppose the ground was the worst it was on the... Oh no, it would have certainly got worse on the chase track, wouldn't it, with racing on the ground?
It did, but this was a really taken debut over fences. He lined up wide on the track under Michael O'Sullivan, and he went and attacked the first fence. He was good and brave at the third fence when he had to be round the bend to the fourth. He got in quite tight, but he was quick at it. Down to the first ditch, which was the sixth fence. He gets in really deep, but he doesn't touch a twig. He was long at the eighth. He was brave at the ninth. And then when he got to the last fence, he was very good, and he absolutely hosed up. And Food of Brazil kept him honest all the way through the early part of that race. I thought it was a really pleasing debut over fences. He is going to the Irish Arkell at the DRF, and he, to me, is the right favourite in the Arkell. He was a brilliant novice hurdler, and he's shown himself to be a really good jumper of a fence.
Yeah, I think he was brilliant to start off with. Barry Connell was outlining his dream. He wants to win a champion chase, and clearly it sounds like he got into racing the same time as me, because his sort of love for racing is built on the likes of the triple champion chase winner Badsworth Boy, on the toughest horse ever, Viking Flagship. And for those reasons, he really wants to win a champion chase in the long term, and this could well be that horse.
You're showing your age, you and Barry Connell, Badsworth Boy.
I'm perfectly happy. Oh, Badsworth Boy, amazing. Just amazing. I was just coming into racing when he was just slightly on the downgrade, but I loved watching him, and Viking Flagship just means jump racing to me. Let's talk about the Wayward Lad, shall we? The novice chase at Kempton over 2 miles. This was won by Master Chewy beating Nickelback.
It was, and Nickelback jumped out to go a good gallop, as was expected. Poor Bally went with him, and they rocked along down the home straight the first time. They get to the third fence, you can see the gap they have to Master Chewy. Now, to get around to the fifth fence, just look at Nickelback and Borbali through the air compared to Master Chewy. They get ground on him, even though they want a bit further. Now, Nickelback was his own worst enemy. The eighth fence, he hits at a clatter and lands on all fours. And then when he gets to the ninth fence, even though he stands back from it, he drops his hind end in it and it takes more momentum out of him. But even when they get to the third last fence, Nickelback is quicker than, to the eye, he looks to be quicker than Master Chewy. Now, the second last fence, to me, it was Master Chewy's best jump of the whole race. Jumped up by Nickelback. And at the last end, Master Chewy, you'd swear it was on fire, the height he gives it. He's a talented individual, Master Chewy. But his jumping still has to improve.
Yeah, it seems to me that he's quite perverse. He does the opposite of what his jockey wants him to do at any time. It'd be interesting to see what they do go for. This is how the breakdown, according to Race IQ, was in terms of their jumping, and this sort of underlines. Master Chewy did get better as the contest went on. Nickelback, what did you make of him? Sarah Humphrey going into the race was worried that he'll just set up the race for something to come and pick him off, which is what happened.
Yeah, does he? Maybe when he matures more, he looks to me like he wants a little bit further, and he's not as fast as he probably thinks he is. but he's an improving horse. But look, even looking at that graph, the Wayward Lad Novice Chase, the graph from Racing IQ, like Master Chewy is too many of those yellows on the low side to be a graded chase, 2 mile chaser. He needs to get much slicker at his jumping.
And it was something we levelled at him as well when he ran into Elixir de Lutz at Newbury, if you remember. And, you know, that afterwards on ITV, Matt Chapman was suggesting to the owners that maybe the Grand Daniel, obviously he's trained by Nigel Twiston Davis, so I would imagine they're thinking Arkell. Either race, I'm just concerned about his jumping, if I'm perfectly honest. I just don't think it's going to stand up. Let's have a look at the
bet. He jumps, but I don't know, does he love jumping?
Let's have a look at the betting, shall we, for the Arkell Antipost. 10 to 11 favourite now, Paddy Power, Marie Nationale. And Fasil Vega has been pushed right out. Founder 50's come in from very, very big prices. There are significant contests in the Novice Chase Arena this weekend. And there they are at Nace, Weatherby, Warwick and Punchestown, and probably elsewhere as well. And that's what we will be focusing on this time next week as well. Other things we'll be talking about next week. Juvenile hurdlers, the novice hurdling mares. We'll also be talking about this horse, Edwardston, who stepped up to 2.5 miles for the first time at Kempton for the Silvagnaco Conti. So there is plenty to talk about. You can always pick up my column as well at racingtv.com/road to Cheltenham. That was a pretty frantic dash around the novice hurdlers and novice chasers. I suspect it'll be the same next week, Ruby.
It will be. I'm glad I'm not editing the show, Lydia.
You say that. Maybe one day we'll ask you to. Anyway, Ruby, thank you very much for company. Thanks everyone for watching. See you next week.
Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.